Tonight's topic is about the role of the Chachamim in the Mesorah of the Torah and the giving over of the Torah. So someone just asked me, now, is this a Hashkafa Shir? Is this a Halacha Shir? Is it Lamdus, perhaps? And the truth is that the following things brought about this topic, that made me want to talk about this topic tonight. I really planned on it being a Halacha Shir. Normally I just give like a 1 minute introduction to why we're talking about this topic. Maybe we'll do more than a minute of an introduction as to why we're talking about this topic. Last night I was learning with a chassan who's getting married in a week and a half, in a little under 2 weeks, and I'm going to be slated to be his Masada Kiddushin, Amir Tzashem, and he told me that he had a very special surprise for me, and he brought me at the end of the chassan class, he showed me his family's collection of letters from various Gedolei Yisrael from the past three centuries. Phenomenal. He has letters from the Netziv, handwritten notes from the Netziv, you know, everyone from the Netziv to Rav Chaim Eiser to more contemporary Gedolim. Three big volumes where he just one after the other. Really, really fascinating stuff. And I know the kid. I know I taught him and his two brothers, and I said, and the father, both of his parents are dentists, and you know, regular, really nice, wonderful people. I said, like, how did your? This was his father's collection. I said, how did your father get into this? You know, he's not an academic. He's not a professor or a scholar of note. How did he get into like collecting Kisvei Yad? And he said, you know, he just came across a number of years ago a Ksav Yad from the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he bought it because he was impressed by it. And then he started to think to himself that Klal Yisrael is here. Klal Yisrael has survived because we've had Chachmei Masorah, because we've had people who've been able to shepherd us generation after generation and to guide us and to lead us to this point. And what more valuable thing can you have than, you know, an exhibition of the Chachmei HaMesorah in your life? And what more beautiful family heirloom can you have as a Jew than the Kisvei Yad of great Chachamim, where you feel a certain connection and you learn about them and you learn what drove them and what their great accomplishments were, and all through their own writings. So that's why he developed this. And it struck me that here's a person, like I said, a dentist, very, very nice person, a very special family, wonderful family, but not the family that you would have imagined would be so into collecting Gedolim paraphernalia, but they do, because they're very touched by the idea that the Chachmei HaMesorah played such a critical role in the existence of Klal Yisrael through the generations. And I think very often when we talk about the Chachamim, because we translate things into English, sometimes things get lost in terms of understanding what we mean when we talk about the Chachmei HaMesorah. For example, when we say that a din is a din midrabanan, so what do people say? How do we translate it? That the rabbis made a din. Now, the rabbis is really not a good translation of a din drabanan, because I'm a rabbi, and I'm not really much different than anybody else here. Some of you are probably more dedicated to Torah and mitzvos than I am, and you know, but I'm a rabbi, so these dinim were made by people like me and you and everybody else that we know that aren't really all that different from each other. And when we think of it in those terms, you know, it doesn't seem all that serious. You know, whenever we talk about lo masuna kasvel lechacham, which is the topic I really wanted to talk about tonight, the idea that the rabbis have the right to determine what a din d'oraisa is going to be in certain circumstances. Well, that's an amazing right for a rabbi to have. Why should a rabbi have all that right? But it doesn't mean rabbi. It means Chachmei HaMesorah. It means Gedolei Yisrael. And while many of us have access to lots and lots of rabbis, we don't really have that much close access to Chachmei HaMesorah, to Gedolei Yisrael. And when you do have close access to Gedolei Yisrael, it's overwhelming, because you realize that they're not like me and you, that they are living on a different plane, that they are people who are so worthy of having the ability to frame our Mesorah and to be able to pass on to the next generation, that we can't really we can't really argue with them like we would argue with a friend. We can't really talk about them like we would talk about a friend, because we would just be awed by how much they have worked on themselves to become as great as they have become. And most often when you find people talking about Chachmei HaMesora in a negative way, most often it's people who don't have direct access to those Chachmei HaMesora. Because if they did, they would feel like fools for talking in such a manner, because obviously they would recognize in an instant, probably, if they had direct access, what kinds of, or at least more consistent direct access, what kinds of people they're actually talking about. So there's definitely a hierarchy in the rabbinate. And when we talk about the koach of the chachamim, with through the Mesorah of Torah and Halacha, we're not talking about rabbis. We're talking about, as the term my Rebbe always uses, Chachmei HaMesorah, or Gedolei Yisrael, if you prefer that term, even though it has a certain connotation nowadays, because the Aguda decided to name their Council of Sages the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, so some people don't like that, to refer to the term Gedolim, because they think that means that you have to ask every political question and every minor issue to the Das Torah of Gedolim, and a lot of people don't subscribe to such a philosophy. But whether we subscribe to that philosophy or not, I'm just trying to express that we're not talking about regular people, we're not talking about regular rabbis, we're talking about very, very great chachamim, what the Tanayim were in their generation, the Amorayim were in their generation, what Rabbi Kiva Eger was in his generation, what Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was in his generation, what Rabbi Soloveitchik was in his generation. We're talking about very, very, very big people. And I think that this understanding of the Chachmei HaMesorah is a particular challenge for the, lack of a better term, the centrist Orthodox community, the modern Orthodox community, however you want to define it. Because when you look to our right and you look to our left, they have very clear marching orders. I hate painting with broad strokes, but it's the simplest way to express it. The right-wing community has very clear marching orders. They know exactly what they hold, at least institutionally. Each individual may make their own decisions that go against what the Gedolim say, but institutionally, if the Moetzah says something, then every organization, every Aguda gets in line and follows. And it's very simple in that way, that the Moetzah says, and they do. And there's very clear marching orders. To the left, the open Orthodox community or neoconservative community, depending whose label you prefer to use, the also very clear marching orders. Whatever is most liberal, whatever seems to be the most cutting edge, whatever can push the envelope a little bit further, is the world's greatest mitzvah. And that's what you should do above all else. And it's very clear. Direction is very clear. In our community, direction is not as clear, because we don't have a Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah. And if we did, we probably wouldn't just step in line and do everything exactly as the Moetzes says it. And therefore, we find ourselves, and we know that we're not there to just try to push the envelope, so we're not really sure, I think, a lot of times, where exactly we stand, and that leaves us a little bit vulnerable, because we don't have such clear direction, and very often, even when we talk about great people who we admire, we find ourselves talking about people who are no longer here, people who have passed away decades ago, or in certain cases months ago, but people who are no longer here, people who cannot, who are no longer able to guide us in a direct way. And it's a very challenging thing. It's a very difficult thing to find guidance when there's no one that you actually turn to for guidance. So a person has to have that kind of relationship. Certainly an institution should have that kind of relationship where they could have the honesty, the intellectual honesty to say, we can't make all of our decisions ourselves. We need some help sometimes. And, you know, if let's say we're supposed to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh about how we're doing business, it would be really helpful if we could turn to someone who's an independent, unbiased third party, who we respect a great deal, who's doma l'malach Hashem tzvakos, to borrow the phrase that the Gemara Moed Katan uses about what a Rebbe is supposed to be, that he should be doma l'malach Hashem tzvakos, for help in arriving at a proper judgment of how to handle a given situation. And what often happens is that whether it be an institution or an individual is challenged to think about whether what we're doing is right, we say, oh, we're supposed to think about what we're doing is right. Okay, I thought about it, and yes, it is right. So instead of having someone to turn to, having Gedolim to turn to, and that's something that's very unfortunate. It's something that we need to find our Gedolim in our generation. Now, I've been sort of focused on this for the last couple of months. You may have noticed in my drushas on Shabbos, it started with a conversation, with several conversations I had with a close Talmud of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who, I don't want to say who it is because I don't know if he wants me to, but a close Talmud of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and I had several conversations over the course of the summer, and he's obviously struggling because his Rebbe and the Gadol that was his guide in handling difficult situations and in handling decisions, both institutionally for his yeshiva as well as individually, personally, is gone, and he was dealing with a lot of his own chevra, other fellow talmidim, and many of them felt very lost, as one should feel after their great rebbe, especially someone of that incredible stature, passes away. And this particular Talmud Chacham that I was talking to lives in Israel and has a yeshiva in Israel, and he said that he started looking at the American Orthodox community, and he saw there's this tremendous lack of Gedolei Yisrael. The lack that he first felt in his life, now he sees how bad it is in the American Orthodox community. Not that there's a lack of Gedolim, but that there's a lack of recognition of Gedolim. Meaning, there's no one that's going to say that Rav Herschel Schefter, Rav Mordechai Willig, for the Central Orthodox community, Rav Rosenzweig, whoever the Rav Tversky, the great, great Gedolei Yisrael who we are zocha to have, but there's certainly a lack of recognition that they are Gedolei Yisrael and that they're worthy of seeking guidance from on an institutional level. And this is something that we had many, many conversations about. And he said he thinks that's why you're going to find that the open Orthodox neoconservative world is going to continue to pick off one community after another of formerly centrist or modern Orthodox people, because we lack direction, they have direction, and it's very, and the certainly the culture in America, as we spoke about on Shabbos, is certainly a culture of do what feels right and what feels moral, and don't be bound by the morality of that's imposed by any other system other than your own gut and your own heart, which we know obviously, for any thinking person, would realize that that's not a recipe for success. As I mentioned on Shabbos, you turn on the television and you see what is viewed as heroic and as wonderful. So someone who has the courage to cheat on their wife so that they're following their heart and doing what their real passion says, that's the way it's often depicted in Hollywood. And people actually buy that. People believe this, that if it feels right, then that's the highest morality. So given that that's our culture, that's what we live in, it stands to reason that obviously that's an extreme example, obviously, but it stands to reason that people are going to feel that that if there's something that talks to them morally, even though it doesn't talk to them from a Torah perspective, they're going to want to be drawn toward that. And this Talmud Chacham that I was talking to said the modern Orthodox world really needs Gedolim. And we really need to respect what the Chachmei HaMesorah are, and we need to identify Gedolim. Now, I mentioned to him, this fellow is a Talmud of, Talmud of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and he, therefore, has led his life based on Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's teachings, which are very different than the teachings of many of the other modern Orthodox Gedolim. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, no one could question his credentials as a Gadol B'Yisrael, but certainly, some of the, let's again take another, for example, women's learning. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's championing women's learning was not begrudgingly, it was not a b'dieved, it wasn't, oh, because Nebuch, women are acculturated in our society, they need learning in order to keep them on the path of frumkeit. That was not at all his hashkafa. His hashkafa was that it was certainly a l'chadchila shebelechadchila. It was the ultimate l'chadchila. In fact, he alluded to, without saying straight out, that the better kasha is how previous generations didn't do this earlier. Meaning how previous generations didn't encourage women's learning to this degree. So I said to him, you're going to pick new Gedolim, and then these new Gedolim don't share Rav Aaron's view of women's learning. So then what do you do? And he said it was just very jarring, because he said, if after talking to these gedolim and explaining to them where my life is at, where my community is at, where my yeshiva is at, they say that they think it's unwise to encourage this level of learning, I'd have to swallow my pride and follow their lead, because you have to follow the gedolim of your time. Now that was a very jarring thing to hear, because here's a person who dedicated much of his life, and his wife as well, much of her life, toward advancing the teachings of the Rebbe, of the great Rebbe, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. But he thought that the need was that great, that the need for us to have Gedolim to look to was that great, that he said he would be willing, and his wife as well, would be willing to abandon their entire life's work in order to have that direction that the modern Orthodox community, the centrist Orthodox community, so desperately needs. Now, lack of kavod for gedolim is certainly not a new phenomenon, but in the world of Twitter and Facebook, where everyone has a daya and everyone is able to express that daya in a very public way, in very short order, it's certainly something that can spread much more quickly. Someone just sent me today that a clipping from a newspaper from 85 years ago, that Rav Kook had returned from a trip to America, and he was walking through the streets of the old city of Yerushalayim, and some of the followers of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, who was obviously the arch rival of Rav Kook, took a I think it was a copper kettle of boiling water and threw it out of a window of a yeshiva to aimed at Rav Kook's head, and literally could have killed him. This is so the idea that Gedolim didn't always receive the respect they deserve is certainly not a new phenomenon. It's certainly something that has existed. So I thought we would dedicate tonight's shiur. Obviously, I have a lot more to say ashkafically, but I probably got myself in enough trouble. So we'd dedicate tonight's shiur to the idea, to one element of the koach that the Torah gives to Chachmei HaMesora in determining halacha. And the idea I want to discuss is the idea of Nimsar Dover L'Chachamim. I remember when I was in yeshiva learning Maseches Moed Katan, because we had to take Smicha B'china and Avelos, so learning Maseches Moed Katan, that's when I first came across this idea. It's really a Gemara in Chagiga as well, where the Gemara talks about Meleches Chalamoed. There's a major machlokas, Machlokas Tanayim, Amrayim, Rishonim. Is the Isser to do Malach on Chol HaMoed an Isser d'Oraisa or an Isser d'Rabbanan? Those Malachas that we're not allowed to do, at least. On Chol HaMoed, is that an Isser d'Oraisa or an Isser d'Rabbanan? So the Gemara says that, Pasuk says, Sheshes Yom Tochol Matzos, V'yom HaShvi Atzeres LaHashem. So the Gemara says, Mashvi Atzer, Av Sheshes Yomim Atzurin. That if the seventh day you're not allowed to do malacha, must be the other 6 days are being compared to the seventh day in the pasuk, so it must also be days that you're not allowed to do malacha. Says the Gemara, imashvi atzer b'kal malacha, af sheshes yom matzurim b'kal malacha. Well, wait a second. On the seventh day of Pesach, you're not allowed to do any malacha. So then maybe for Chol HaMoed you shouldn't be allowed to do any malacha. Tamalomar v'yom hashvi atzeres. No, that's why the pasuk says only the seventh day is atzeres. Hashvi yatzur b'chol malacha vein sheshes yom matzurim b'chol malacha. That only the seventh day is the day of Isra malacha. The other 6 days you're still allowed to do malacha. And then says the Gemara the line: Halo masran hakasuv ela lechachamim lomar lach eze yom asur ve'eze yom muter. The Torah gave the right to the chachamim to figure out which day is asur, which day is mutar, ezo milacha asura, ve ezo milacha mutaras, to determine what's called a milacha on Chol HaMoed. So even though the Gemara's conclusion seems to be it may be a dinta oraisa that one is not allowed to do milacha on Chol HaMoed, it's up to the Chachamim to determine what that Dinda Oraisa means, what that Dinda Oraisa includes. And if the Chachamim would have decided that Bishul, for example, is Asur on Chol HaMoed, then it would have been an Isser da Oraisa, not an Isser d'Rabbanan. But because the Chachamim decided that, no, Bishul is Mutter and many other Malachas are Mutter, but they said a Malacha for a Dovra Aved is Mutter, that's what made it Mutter Mida Oraisa. That the Chachamim were given sort of like silly putty or Play-Doh, that here's the Din d'Oraisa, now shape it as you want. And they had the right to shape what exactly the Din d'Oraisa is. An incredible koach that the Torah gives to the Chacham. It comes up one other place in Shas. This concept also comes up in Maseches Bechoros. The Gemara Maseches Bechoros tells us, the Mishnah actually says, that if the Yisrael has a Bechor, a firstborn animal of a kosher animal born into his flock, so if it's a behema daka, if it's a small animal, he should care for it for 30 days before giving it to the Kohen. But if it's a behema gas, if it's a larger animal, a cow, then he should care for it for 50 days before giving it to the Kohen. So the Gemara says, well, where do you get these numbers from? That he should care for it for 30 days, he should care for it for 50 days. So the Gemara says, well, there is a drasha from the Pasuk where the Pasuk seems to be telling us that he's supposed to care for it for some time. How much time? Well, lo masra nakasuv. Once again, the Chachamim got to determine what that din da'oraisa is. They have the right to say that the din da'oraisa is care for this animal for 30 days, that animal 50 days. And if you care for this animal for only 29 days, then you have violated not a din d'rabanan, a din da'oraisa, because the Chachamim have such a great right to even frame the dinim to form the dinim d'oraisa. Just parenthetically mentioned on Shabbos, I never got back to Shalom Shudas, but I saw in the Sefer Kamotzi Shal Rav that Rav Chaim Kreisworth said that when he met the Imrei Emes, he asked the Imrei Emes, it was a medrash in this past week's parsha, in Parshas Re'eh, where the medrash says that one should bring a bechor min ha-muvchar, that one of the things a person should do, behidur, and bring the nicest thing for the mitzvah, is to bring a bechor, a firstborn animal, min ha-muvchar. So Rav Kreisworth asked the Imrei Emes, what does it mean, bring the nicest bechor? Whatever animal is born first is the bechor. You don't get to choose if it's nice or not nice. It could be a weak, frail animal, it's a bechor, you don't get to choose. What does it mean, min ha-muvchar? So the possible answer, and Rav Kreisworth thought that the correct answer is this halacha, and the Rambam quotes this halacha, that there is a time frame after the birth of the animal, before you give it to the Kohen, where the Yisrael is taking care of the animal. And while he's taking care of it, he should make sure that he fattens it up as good as possible, that he makes sure that it's as robust as possible when it leaves his hand, because it should be done as a mitzvah, min ha-muvchar. That's probably what it means, that it's min ha-muvchar. The Imrei Emes had different answers. He said, no, there's a machlokas tanaim. What if two animals come out at the same time? They both stick their head out of the mother's womb at the same time. So which one is the bechor? So one opinion of tanaim is that the Kohen gets to choose. So he says, that's what the Medrash means, that the Kohen gets to choose the Muvchar amongst the two. Hard to imagine that the Medrash is talking about that very narrow case. From some of Kreisworth's answer is a better answer. So what's this idea, that lo masna kasvel chamim? Apparently, the idea is that when the Torah gives a klal, but it gives insufficient pratim, the Torah gives us a rule, but it doesn't really give any details, and even the Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Ben don't give us details. Even employing the Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Ben, we can't figure out the details. So it must be that the Torah is telling the Chachamim, it's your job to figure out the details and to determine what those details are. Now the truth is, this may seem like every other din d'rabbanan and everything else the Rabbanan do, meaning the application of the Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Ben is also the Rabbanan, right? That's what all of Shas is. That's what the Tanaim and Amoraim do. The difference is, and Rav Asher Weiss points this out in this week's parasha, in Simon Chav Zayin and Devarim, the difference is that when it comes to the rest of Shas, the Chacham's job is to be mefarish the Torah, to explain what the intention of the Torah was. When it comes to Lamasun HaKasav HaLacham, their job is not to explain what the Torah meant, because the Torah didn't mean anything. The Torah just gave a rule, take care of the animal. Don't do malach on Chol HaMoed, some malachos on Chol HaMoed. Their job was to decide on what will be included in the din d'oraisa. Not to explain what the kavanas HaTorah was, but to actually decide on it, which is an incredible koach, that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu entrusted the Chachamim with creating dinim d'oraisa. And there, Rav Asher points out in his piece that there are many, many other examples that aren't explicit in Shas, but that really also seem to rely on this idea of Lomasun HaKasav Ela L'Chachamim. And he actually points out, that without getting into to all the examples, I'll give one or two. There is a Machlokas Rishonim in the 8th parak of Maseches Yuma, if the other Inuyim of Yom HaKippurim, outside of eating and drinking, are Din D'oraisa or Din D'rabbanan. We know that you're not allowed to eat and drink on Yom Kippur, that's definitely a din da'oraisa. Eating and drinking is one inun. Chamesh inuyim, eating and drinking counts as one. So the other four inuyim, there's machlokas, whether they're dinim da'oraisa or dinim d'rabbanan. Tosus Yishanim in Maseches Yuma, Davayin Zayinun Beis, says it has to be d'rabbanan, because bathing, we find, is mutter for a kala and for a melech, the Mishnah says. That a melech and a kala are both allowed to bathe, to wash on Yom Kippur. If it were a din d'oraisa, how could we ever be mekel for a kala and for a melech? It wouldn't make sense that we'd be able to be mekel for a kala and for a melech. So the Ran says, no, I don't think that's a raya at all. Says the Ran in Yuma, hayenir li dekula midaraisa ninu. That all the inuyim are d'oraisa. El akivan delav bechal linuya deksivi bekra behedya b'oraisa ninu. El mirubuya deshabasa nasu. Since it's not explicit in the pasuk, therefore, the other ones, other than eating and drinking, are a little more lenient. And the Chachamim got to determine when those inuyim apply, when they don't. They're daraisa. But the Chacham determined that for a melech and a kala, it doesn't exist. That it's not a din daraisa for a melech and a kala. So again, you see, the Chachamim, according to the Ran, are given this kind of koach to determine that bathing on Yom Kippur is a daraisa. Bathing in Yom Kippur for a melech and a kala, heter gam. Unbelievable. They had the right to choose, to decide what the Yisra Darais is going to be. Or, for example, the Russian third paragraph of Sukkah talks about a lulav hayavish being kosher b'shas adchak. Lulav hayavish is pasul. You're not allowed to take pasul things b'shas adchak and call it a mitzvah. Meaning, if, let's say, you can't find matzah that's made with the five grains. So you could eat rice cakes and call it a mitzvah? We would never say such a thing. Because it's shasat chak, I can't find anything with the five grains. Okay, so you don't have the mitzvah then. So lulav hayavish is possible. So the Rush says, yeah, but b'shasat chak, lulav hayavish becomes kasher. You know, there's a book I have at home that discusses all the details of picking dalad minim, and it discusses if we ever really see a lulav hayavish. You know, people look at their lulav, and they sometimes think they found a lulav hayavish. Chances are we don't have a real lulav hayavish anymore. It would have to have been drying for years, probably, for it to be a lulav hayavish. And he writes there that Rav Dov Feinstein, I forgot the author of the Sefer's name, but he said that Rav Dov Feinstein told him that Rav Moshe, when he was in Russia, he was in Liban, used the same lulav for 7 years straight. He would hang it up in the shul, you know, on a hook, and he would use the same lulav for 7 years. So Mustana yelled that it didn't have a din of lulav hayavish after all that time. But according to the Rush, maybe it did, according to the Rush. And it would still be kosher, because the lulav hayavish is kosher. Mehechi tasty. You could take something that's mamish pasul and say that b'shas adchak is kosher. So the explanation of that Rush is, as the Rush explains himself, kalhani psulim masra na kosov lechachamim. Vehem amru shalo b'shas adchak afilu b'diyavet lo yatsa, kidei sheyizrael yisrael b'mitzvos. The Chacham determined that if it's not a Shas Adchak, you're not Yotzeim even Midoraisa with the Lulav Yavish. But the Chacham determined that B'Shas Adchak, you're Yotzeim Midoraisa with the Lulav Yavish. Again, determining a Din Da'oraisa. The Chacham got to decide what the Din Da'oraisa is. But we also find that this idea of L'masra HaKazal L'Chamim takes on different formats as well. It's not only when the Torah gives us a general rule and doesn't give any details that it must be that the Chacham get to determine what details are included in the Din D'oraisa, but there are other forms of this idea of L'masra HaKazal L'Chamim. Actually, before we get to those other forms, point out one more thing related to that first form. The idea that when the Torah gives a general rule without any details, that the Chacham get to determine the details. There's a fascinating Rambam that we've definitely learned in the past at one point or another. The Rambam, the 14th paragraph of the Avel, discusses the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So mitzvah Bikur Cholim, mitzvah d'oraisa or mitzvah d'rabbanan? What would you say? Mitzvah Bikur Cholim. So where does it come up in the Torah? Well, it comes up by Avram, right? But that's not a mitzvah, that's just describing what God did. So maybe a Ratzon HaTorah kind of mitzvah. But where else? Where does the Torah in as a command tell us that we're supposed to do? So again, in stories in Bereishis, we have Bikur Cholim, but where do we have like a command, a mitzvah in the Torah to do Bikur Cholim? So it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah to do Bikur Cholim. But what does it say in the Torah? It says something a little more vague. V'yahavta l'recha kamocha. What's he say? Yashuvat tov. You know, do nice things. Be good to other people. So says the Rambam, so what does that make Bikur Cholim? Is Bikur Cholim Din D'oraisa or not? So what does v'ahavtal re'echa kamocha mean? V'ahavtal re'echa kamocha means love everybody, love your fellow Jew like yourself. How do I do that? What does that mean? What am I supposed to do? So the Rambam says, what do you mean? What it means is that you're supposed to achnas kala, you're supposed to bikur cholim, you're supposed to nicham avelim, you're supposed to be malave guests out of your house. All of these things. That's all part of v'ahavtal re'echa kamocha. So now, using the formulation we've been using, that when the Torah gives a very generic kind of mitzvah, and the details aren't in the Torah, even with the Yudin Lishat Torah and Dreshes Ben, the details aren't in the Torah. So what would the status of those details be when the rabbis formulate those details? It would seem that they should be Doraisa, that would be a classic example of Lomasra Kasav al Chachamim, that the Torah gave the right to the Chacham to decide what the mitzvah Doraisa is and what it isn't. So you would imagine that the Rambam would say, here the Torah said, V'yavtal erech kamocha. The Torah never said how to do it. The Rabbanan said, here's a bunch of ideas, nichem avelim, bikur cholim, gmilas chasadim, all sorts of great ideas. Then it must mean that those become dinim daraisa. But says the Rambam, mitzvah saseh shel divrehem. It's a mitzvah midrabanan levaker cholim lenachim aveilim lohotzi amei sulach neskalu vilvos orchim ulvesasik bechol tzorchei akvura losi salakosiv levon vlispod velachbor velikbor. It's a mitzvah saseh midrabanan to do all of these forms of kind deeds to other people. Sameach chasam v'kala lesadim bechol tzorcheim ve'elu ein gmilus chasadim shebeguvan she'en lehem shir. Even though all of these mitzvos are only midrabanan, harehein bechlal v'yahavtal re'echa kamocha. But they're included in the pasuk of v'yahavtal re'echa kamocha. Kol dvarim shata rotza sheyasu osam lecha acherim aseyato osam lechecha b'tor mitzvos. Whatever you want other people to do for you, you should do for them. So it sounds like it should have been a din d'oraisa, based on our formulation of what Lomasra Kasav Alacham means. But yet the Rambam says explicitly it's only Din Rabbanan. So Rav Asher Weiss says the following, I thought, unbelievable chiddush. He suggests the following. He says, V'nira b'zeh, d'shayni, again, what were the two examples that we had of Lomasra Kasav Alacham, where the Torah, that the Gemara gave us, where the Torah spoke in vague terms, and the Chum had to determine what the details are, had to decide on the details? Malachas Chalamoed, and taking care of a Bukhar animal. And then we found Rishonim discussed Lulav. What was the other example we gave besides for Lulav? Inui and Yom Kippur. Right? Very specific mitzvahs. In what way is that different than Bikur Cholim, Hachnasas Kala, or I shouldn't say it that way. In what way is that different than V'yahavtal Re'echa Kamocha? So V'yahavtal Re'echa Kamocha is a logical mitzvah. Okay, that's one way that that one could have certainly distinguished. Rav Asher says that maybe there's a difference between a mitzvah shegidron v'yesodon b'maaseh ha'adon mi'mitzvos she'ikaron mechovas halavavos v'toras ha'nefesh. Maybe there's a difference between mitzvos that involve action and mitzvos that involve feeling and emotion. Taking a lulav, action-oriented mitzvah. Even inoy on Yom Kippur, you can't say, well, this guy will make himself suffer this way, and this one will make himself suffer that way. All of these are very action-oriented mitzvahs. V'yahavta l'reyecha kamocha is a mitzvah shebelev. And because it's a mitzvah shebelev, it lends itself to be more pliable and to be different for different people. Some people's lev carries them in a place where other people's lev doesn't, in a way that other people's lev doesn't. So he therefore says, you can't say that what's going to be a kasher esrog for Ploni is a pasul esrog for Almoni. Right? That can't be on a daraisa level. You can't say that a certain maisa is going to be mutter and Yom Kippur for one guy, but not for another guy. Avol b'mitzvah v'yahavtal re'echa kamocha, which is a mitzvah shebelev, Av shechidish haRambam the mitzvah zu mechayeves gam l'nug minug ha'avim v'lasak b'gvilas chesedim. Even though the Rambam says this involves doing all sorts of chesed, but mikol makom in kol hechrich yesh ofen mesuyam umugdar l'kayim mitzvah zu. There's nothing telling us that it has to be a specific way to do this mitzvah. See, it can't be that God gave us the mitzvah of Bechor and left it up to us to decide what talks to me about taking care of Bechor. If I feel like caring for a Bechor means caring for it for a week, then that's what it is. No, it doesn't work in the world of regular mitzvahs. But when you're talking about a mitzvah where the whole kiyum is belayv, it could be that on a doraisa level, there are multiple methods of being mekayim the mitzvah. So l'masna kasva l'chachamim is when the chacham had to come up with a rule that works. So the chacham had to come up with a rule because it can't be that it's just different for everybody. So when it came to Bechor, when it came to Melechus Cholamoid, they had to come up with rules that work universally for everybody. Because something can't be a malacha for one guy in Cholamoid and not be a malacha for another guy in Cholamoid. But when it comes to Kiyum Shebelev, how do you express love for your fellow Jew? Well, for one person, it could be that Achnasas Archim is where he excels. And for another person, it may be where Bikur Cholim is where they excel. Some people are very good at Nichum Avinu. They're good listeners, they know how to say the right thing when called upon, they know when not to say the wrong thing. And some people are very bad at it. They nervous laughter, and they just say inappropriate things, and they just they freak out a little bit. So it could be, says Rav Asher, that it's the fact that you have to do Nichum Avinu, that you have to do, that's only Midrabanan. On a Doraisa level, each person gets to choose how he's going to express his Ve'avta L'Re'echa Kamocha. And he says he thinks this is not only by the mitzvah Ve'avta L'Re'echa Kamocha. We have another mitzvah in the Torah, Kedoshim Tiyu. So how does one do Kedoshim Tiyu? So there are many different paths that one could choose. That's a Kiyum Shebelev. That's something about a Chovas HaNefesh, Chovas HaLev. Or for example, Va'asisa HaYashar Va'atov. So there's a din, the Gemara derives from Va'asisa HaYashar Va'atov, called Dina de Bar Metzra, that if you're going to sell your house, you have to let your neighbors know first, so that they, if they want to buy it, it would be most convenient for them to buy two houses next to each other, or two fields, is what it's really about, next to each other, rather than having one field here and one field somewhere else. So you have to give them the first rights. You tell them what the asking price is. If they're willing to pay it, you have to give them the first rights before anyone else, because Vasisa Yashavatov, be a nice person, do the right thing. But all the Rishonim, all Din of the Bar Mitzvah, is only a Din Midrabanan. What do you mean? It's the explanation of Vasisa Yashavatov. Why isn't it a Din D'Oraisa? Meaning, shouldn't that be L'masra Kasav Al-Chamim? No, because Vasis HaYashav HaTov is a Chavas HaNefesh, it's a Chavas HaLev. And therefore, it lends itself to being fulfilled in multiple ways. So when Chazal say, do it this way, Din D'Bar Metzra, that can only be a Din D'Rabbanan. That can't be a Din D'Oraisa. Or, for example, the mitzvah of Heseba, on the night of the Seder. Mitzvah D'Oraisa or Mitzvah D'Rabbanan to do Heseba? What do you say? Mitzvah D'Rabbanan, right? Now, what are the mitzvahs d'oraisa the night of the Seder? There aren't that many anymore. I mean, matzah. Well, maror nowadays is only d'rabanan. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is d'oraisa, right? But the dalakosos are d'rabanan. Heseba is d'rabanan. Look how the Rambam describes. Well, you can't look because I didn't give Maror Makomos. But listen how the Rambam describes the mitzvah of Heseba. The Rambam writes in the seventh paragraph of Hilchos Chametz to Matzah. B'chol dor v'dor chayev adam laharos es atzmo kilu hu yatza atom yishubud Mitzrayim. Every generation a person has to act as if he is leaving Mitzrayim right now. Shenemar! Because there's a pasuk. V'osanu hotzi misham. God took us out, the pasuk says. Shenemar implies we're dealing with din d'oraisa. V'al dor zet siva ha-kadosh baruch hu b'torah. And that's why there's a mitzvah in the Torah. V'zacharta ki eved ayisa. Then you should remember you were an eved. Kilomar ki ilu ata ba'atzmacha ayisa eved. Not that your forefathers were of other, but that you were an eved. V'yatzas l'cheres v'niftis. And that you were set free and you were redeemed. L'fichach. So again, he's working off of a din d'oraisa now. Here's a din d'oraisa. Several psukim that tell us you are supposed to behave as if it was you that left Mitzrayim. Dinim d'oraisa. Therefore, what does that demand of us? Therefore, you need to leave. But everyone holds that Haseb is only d'rabanan. How do you get from all these psukim showing yourself, acting as if you left Mitzrayim to dinim derabbanan of Heseba. Elamai, says Rav Asher Weiss, it must be that the din of Chayav Adam Liro Sasatzmo, Kilu Yatzim Laharo Sasatzmo, Kilu Yatzim Mitzrayim is a Kiyum Shabalev, is a Chovas Halev, Chovas HaNefesh. How does one do that? On a Doraisa level, there must be multiple ways to accomplish it, depending on who you are. For some people, it will be putting the matzahs on their shoulders and walking around the table. For some people, it will be leaning. Different people will be different things. If it's going to be formalized into a very specific action, that can only be midrabanan. That can't be midoraisa. But when you're dealing with regular chovas hamaaseh, regular actions, regular ritual actions that one must do, well then, if the Torah gives us a klal without giving us sufficient detail, then when the chachamim give those details are daraisa. It's only on the chovas hanefesh, chovas halev, that the details would be midrabanan. But we also have other forms of lomasar kazvel chachamim. Try to maybe run through them. One type of lomasar kazvel chachamim that we have, the Taz in Yerodei and Siman Kuf Yud Zayin discusses the isra of schora b'machalos hasuros. You're not allowed to do business with non-kosher food. So I mentioned someone asked me, they wanted to start a tailgating business. But instead of you having to, you know, football season's coming up, so instead of Nebuch having to schlep to the stadium with the folding chairs and the folding table and the grill and the meat and everything, and then there's not going to be any room for kids in the car, so you can't bring your kids to the game, so, you know, and doing the whole tailgate all Sunday morning, that you just call a phone number, they're going to tell you which parking lot to go to, they'll set up everything for you, and, you know, for a nominal fee, and they'll clean up after you and everything. So, what? It exists, yeah. So the guy wanted to start this business, and he wanted to know, can you use non-kosher food products to start this business? So there's an issur of schora b'machalos hasuros. So the Taz writes in Yerodea, yeah, but you're allowed to do schora with susim v'chamorim. You're allowed to sell horses and donkeys, because no one eats those anyway. But the issur of schora b'machalos hasuros is an issur d'oraisa, and the Torah never tells us that the reason you're not allowed to do the schora is because people will eat them. It has nothing to do with eating it. So what? This is Darshin and Taima Dekra. We're assuming that the reason for the Yisr is because people would eat it, and therefore things that are not normal to eat would not be included in the Yisr Schara. So the Taz writes, no, it's because there are two different words in the Pasuk. The word Yihiyu in the Pasuk, the Gemara Darshins, to teach us an Yisr of Schara with Machalos Hasuros. But then the word Lachem sounds like there's a Heter of Schara with Machalos Hasuros. So how can they both be true? So when dealing with the contradiction in the Pasuk, lo masna kasavel chacham, the Taz says. The chacham have the right to decide, since the Torah is indicating that there are circumstances where schor is going to be asr and circumstances where schor is going to be mutter, the chacham have the right to decide, not determine, decide which circumstances it's asr, which circumstances it's mutter. To decide what the din d'oraisa is going to be. So that's another example of lo masna kasavel chacham, not just when the Torah is vague, but when the Torah tells us two contradictory things. So the Chacham have the right to decide what's included in the Yisr, what's included in the Heter. One more example. Sometimes it's just a logical Hechrich that the Chacham have the rights, even if there's no Hechrich from the Psukim, it has to be that the Chacham have the rights to determine a Din D'oraisa. For example, we allow Gerim nowadays, even though we don't have a Bezin of Smuchim. Why? So the Gemara in Gittin says, Shlichus Sayukav Dinu. We're doing the Shlichus of the previous Batei Dinu. So what does that mean? Says Rav Asher Weiss, what it might mean is that without smicha, so what are we supposed to say? Okay, I guess we'll never have a Beis Din again until smicha comes back. And then what? If we get to run a society, it will be chaos. There will be no Beis Din, there will be no law, there will be no way of enforcing the law. That's ridiculous. Hasvara nosenes, that the Chacham have the right to determine what's called a Beis Din. That the Chacham have the right to determine, okay, we are now a Beis Din who are doing the shlichus of the previous Beis Din. And that's l'masr nokasav al Chacham. And that Beis Din has kol tokef of Beis Din d'oraisa. And therefore they can make a ger when they're megayer someone. It's not a ger midrabanan. It's a Jew midoraisa that they're able to make. Also based on the Masna Kas of Elacham. So a little bit about the incredible trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in the Chachamim. And again, the translation of Chacham is not rabbis. The translation of Chacham is Chachmei HaMesorah, Gedolei Yisrael throughout the generations.